All right, everyone, it's showtime. Welcome back to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. With me today is a woman you have absolutely heard of before. She is an investigative journalist and currently the host of the show on Rumble, Loomer Unleashed. Everybody, it is Laura Loomer. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about. We have only a few months to go before the election is upon us. So there's definitely a lot of news stories that have been breaking that I think might actually have consequences for how at least some independents or undecided people may vote. First thing I want to bring up, though, is something you've been tweeting about. Tucker Carlson, he's been doing his show on X, breaking, honestly, a lot of stories, or at the very least, bringing a lot of different issues to the forefront of the national conversation. His latest episode is an interview with a Palestinian Christian. I'm not sure exactly what denomination the man is, but essentially the interview, if people have seen it, it's pretty critical of American evangelicals specifically. And the fact that I think this preacher was saying a lot of Palestinian Christians feel like they're being overlooked in this conflict because it's not just, you know, Jewish people and Muslim people over there. There are Palestinian Christians as well as Israeli Christians that don't seem to be getting a lot of attention. You had some very critical words to say about this interview. Would you mind sharing a little bit what your thoughts on that Tucker Carlson episode were?
Yeah, and I want to say, I think that since Tucker Carlson has left Fox News and he's been able to fully express himself on X, that his content has improved. Generally speaking, I like a lot of Tucker's interviews. But the reason I'm critical of this interview with this Palestinian priest is because, you know, when you watch this interview and you see how critical they are, pretty much blaming evangelicals and then also trying to cast blame, I would say, on Israel for the death or the casualty of Palestinian Christians. Well, who's to blame here, right? What people need to understand is the fact that there was a ceasefire that existed between Hamas and Israel on October 7th and the hours before Hamas decided to attack. And so if people are concerned about the death of Christians, they should be blaming Hamas. And when you look at the persecution of Christians, who happen to be the most persecuted people in the world, and you look at it as it relates geopolitically to the region of the Middle East, who's doing the killing, most of the killing of Christians? Well, it's Muslims. And so I just wanted to see a little bit more pushback on this priest, because Tucker didn't even challenge him when talking about Bethlehem, which is under the control of the Palestinian Authority. If you go to Israel and if you go to Bethlehem, you'll see that there's signs at the entrance that say Israelis are not allowed. And so they have these signs in the Palestinian Authority. They're bright red signs that prevent Israelis from entering. And I just think that in terms of the message that they're trying to convey, it's almost as if they're blaming Israelis and Jews for the death of Palestinian Christians, when in reality, it's Hamas that provoked this war and provoked these attacks, and Israel has a right to defend themselves. There's always going to be casualties in war, but I think that it's a bit of a distortion of reality to say that, you know, most of the killing of Christians that are taking place right now is at the hands of Israelis or Jews. It's just intellectually dishonest, especially if you look at the world's 56 majority Muslim countries and their treatment of Christians.
No, I mean, that's absolutely the perspective, I think, is needed, because, you know, obviously this is someone who's in Palestine. He's speaking to a Palestinian perspective, but worldwide, no, Israel is not the number one persecutor of Christians for sure. But do you think that, I mean, this specific instance does warrant a discussion specifically of what's happening in this part of the world? I'm not sure if you watched the interview, it's entirely, but something that the priest seemed to take great issue with is the fact that there have been Christian churches specifically that have been targeted during this conflict since October 7th started, and that has resulted in Christian casualties. That the priest did go out of his way to say that doesn't mean that we support Hamas, but do you think that there's any room for Christians to criticize Israeli actions that have resulted in things like the destruction of historical churches?
Well, it's the Holy Land. And so I don't think that Israel is deliberately or intentionally trying to target or destroy Christian sites, right? I think that they go out of their way with great care and with great detail to protect these sites. And it's unfortunate, in all acts of war, there's going to be casualties, there's going to be destruction of property. But again, there was a ceasefire that existed between Israel and Hamas in the hours before the attacks on October 7th. And so for everybody that's calling for a ceasefire now and is calling for an end to the killing and calling for an end to the destruction of these religious sites, they need to understand that this was 100% provoked and is the cause of Hamas, Palestinians. I mean, the Palestinian people, let's not forget, they voted to elect Hamas as their representative body. And so I think that there's going to be people who are outraged. I mean, especially people who have lost loved ones and family members. I'm not trying to have a lack of humanity there. My heart goes out to all innocent people that become casualties of war. Nobody wants to see innocent people die. But there was absolutely zero pushback from Tucker Carlson during this interview, especially with regards to the fact that Bethlehem is controlled by the Palestinian Authority. There are signs erected at Bethlehem, which used to be majority Christian when it was under Israeli control. And now it's under the control of the Palestinian Authority, which is now 95% Arab. I mean, Christians are not exactly treated well in Bethlehem.
Right. And that the idea that Bethlehem specifically is under PLO control, that's something that a lot of people who are critical of Tucker have brought up. And it's interesting in regard to this specific priest, because this is something my producer sent to me. We can watch it here together. So this priest, before, I believe, October 7th, he was already, I guess, a critic of the Israeli government. It kind of seems to me that this is someone who, even before October 7th, had these criticisms, though. So I think when a lot of people say, well, it's Hamas, October 7th, a lot of these grievances seem to predate that. So I'm not sure saying, well, Hamas, they started this conflict, would be accurate in this man's eyes, because it seems like he believes this conflict has been going on for a long time. And we have this video.
Bethlehem, the city believed to be the birthplace of Jesus.
And this is the same person.
But because Bethlehem is a Palestinian city in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, it's surrounded today by a massive concrete wall, military checkpoints, and illegal settlements.
It's imposing a system of control that I'm sure Jesus was very familiar of. If he's born today, he would be born on our side of the wall.
Over the decades, the percentage of Christians living in Bethlehem and the occupied Palestinian territories has plummeted, rendering them practically invisible.
Did you know there were Palestinian Christians before coming here?
No. I didn't.
So I guess, like, you know, here is that same priest talking about the wall in Bethlehem. And obviously we can criticize the PLO, but
noticed that the clip was produced by Al Jazeera, though, which is funded by Qatar, which is currently providing safe haven for all of Hamas's representatives. I mean, Ismail Haniyeh and his entire family is provided safe haven. Qatar is now the capital, the headquarter for Hamas and their operations and negotiations, right? So I wouldn't exactly trust anything coming out of Al Jazeera, and the fact that Al Jazeera would go out of their way to interview him and, you know, try to make him the focal point of their anti-Israel propaganda. I mean, there's no disputing that Qatar is a global sponsor.
It is interesting that Al Jazeera seems to be giving more of a platform to these Palestinian Christians, and this was one of the priest's complaints, than even, you know, a lot of conservative networks. We don't hear the Palestinian Christian side being proclaimed on Fox News or anything like that. It does seem, and this is something he mentioned specifically, that there is almost a black hole of input from this population, which is, I mean, America is a predominantly Christian country. Shouldn't we be hearing more from our brothers and sisters in Christ in the region?
We should, but who has driven Christians out of the region? I mean, let's be honest, it's not the Jews, it's the Muslims. And so there's a reason why we're not hearing more of these voices. Where are these voices? The Christian population in Bethlehem has significantly decreased. It is now 95% Arab, okay? And it's not necessarily Arab Christian either. You have a lot of people who have been driven out because of the religious hostility from Muslims to Jews and Christians. And so I just think that personally, I would like to see that part of the conversation be brought up a little bit more by Tucker Carlson. Do I think that Tucker Carlson hates Jews? No, I don't think that Tucker Carlson hates Jewish people. But I do think that a lot of these misconceptions, and when there isn't pushback, it does lead to people thinking, well, the Jews must hate Christians, right? And we've seen this really blow up on social media in the last few weeks, especially with the debate. And I was on your space the other night regarding Daily Wire, and this overall perception of how Jews feel about Christians, right? I don't think that it's anti-Semitic to say Christ is king. I don't have a problem with, you know, Christians worshiping. I proclaim myself that America is a Christian country, and I say that as a Jew myself. So I just think that with Tucker Carlson's platform and the size of his platform, he does need to be careful. Everybody with a large platform needs to be considerate of, you know, how their interviews and how the subjects that they're platforming, and I'm not encouraging deplatforming, but if we are going to have these conversations, we need to be intellectually honest about it and push back when people are being intellectually dishonest, like this priest was. I'm not discounting the fact that Christians are dying. And I obviously condemn the fact that Christians are dying. I don't want to see any innocent people be killed in this war.
Right. And I guess to that point, what were your main criticisms specifically of what this priest was saying? Because, I mean, when he talks about life in Bethlehem, obviously it is controlled by PLO, like you said, but I guess to ignore Israeli influence when there's a wall and military checkpoint around it, that seemed to be what his issue was.
Right, but Israelis are not even allowed to enter. They're not allowed to enter.
Right, but if another country has a barricade around where you live, it seemed like he had a big issue with the fact that there was not freedom of movement for these Palestinian Christians.
But there is freedom of movement. They're allowed to move. The people that are prevented from moving are Israeli Jews by the red signs at Bethlehem at the checkpoint that say no Israelis allowed, no Jews allowed. Palestinians are allowed to move freely throughout Israel. You have Muslims that serve in the Knesset in Israel. You have Muslims that serve in the IDF. So this is what I'm talking about, is with the pushback. That's what I wanted to see Tucker Carlson push back more on these points, because people will say, oh, they just hate Muslims. They hate Christians. There's representation for Christians and Muslims in the Knesset. And like I said, this is the Holy Land. I don't know why there's now this pissing match between Christians and Jews as it relates to the Holy Land, because we should be working together to protect these holy sites. It's all of our land, right?
No.
It's just this unholy alliance between Christians and Islamists for the sake of demonizing and persecuting Israel is what bothers me. And I personally feel like Tucker Carlson did not do enough to push back on that.
Right. Well, I think it, when you listen to the interview, I didn't hear him say many positive things about Muslims. I didn't really hear a lot of Hamas apologetics, like this is why it's okay that the hostages are, or anything like that. But I think there needs to be room where we can criticize Israeli actions specifically without it becoming a whataboutism game. And there is a line there, obviously, with being able to criticize these state actions while also simultaneously recognizing that, you know, not all the problems that they're facing right now are Israel's fault specifically, but it just feels like we can't even have that conversation. And Tucker is really one of the first people to even attempt it. And he's already getting backlash, I suppose, is what
I think other people have been criticizing Israel long before Tucker Carlson. You know, I mean, look, you have Nick Fuentes, who has been unjustly deplatformed on all social media sites. So, you know, there's a lot of people. I don't think that somebody's a Jew hater just because they criticize Israel, right? I don't think that criticizing Israel should be outlawed. I'm just focused on truth. And the fact of the matter is it's factually incorrect to say that Israel controls Bethlehem.
Well, he didn't say that Israel controlled Bethlehem. I think he was talking about the ways in which the Israeli government is making things harder for Palestinian Christians, including those who live in Bethlehem. But it's like saying, well, Israel didn't control Gaza before October 7th, so therefore Israel had nothing to do with living conditions in Gaza. I don't think that would be fair to say.
Right, but if they have grievances, they should express these grievances with the Palestinian Authority. That's my biggest issue with the interview. Like I said, right, I'm not claiming to be a theological expert, and we're not going to agree on everything as it relates to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. I just felt that it was a bit intellectually dishonest to not have pushback on this priest. And I also think that the producer should have done a better job in vetting him, because you showed me that video. There's a video that I retweeted today and posted that shows this priest praising Palestinians for their sage on October 7th. And I think it's inappropriate to platform somebody like that. I mean, look, if we want to, free speech is free speech, but what kind of message is Tucker Carlson sending when he doesn't challenge him on his comments like this?
So I do have that clip that you referenced that you did share. So this is a clip of him, that priest that was interviewed, that I believe was from their church service the day following October 7th. So this is the clip in question. So I guess my issue with that clip in particular is that it's 5 seconds long. And so I did go to Facebook to see what was the context of it, because I just thought it was very strange. It doesn't seem to be commending someone who actually took part in October 7th, to be clear. I think he was referencing something else, because he hang on, where is the translation? Okay, it's not showing up on my computer, but I'm not sure it's accurate to paint him as a Hamas sympathizer, if that makes sense, based on that 5 second clip.
Well, whatever people want to call him. I mean, I wouldn't call it a sage. It was a brutal terrorist attack that happened on October 7th. A lot of innocent people, including American citizens, lost their lives. Right. And when we talk about these issues, I think it's important for people that want to say they're America first. And I am America first as well. And unfortunately, now we're in this position where if you believe Israel has sovereignty and a right to protect itself, just like America or any other sovereign nation has a right to protect itself, now it's you're not America first enough, or you're Israel first. And I'm not calling for additional aid to Israel. I'm not calling for a U.S. military intervention. I just believe that Israel should be able to have uninhibited power, right? Just like every other sovereign nation, to decide how they respond to threats within their borders and outside of their borders if it poses an imminent threat to their nation. And unfortunately, right, the United States government seems to think that they're going to make the decision for Israel, where, oh, we need a ceasefire now. Well, guess what? We had a ceasefire. As I said before, we had a ceasefire that existed in the hours before the attacks on October 7th, and it's Hamas that broke that ceasefire. It would be like the United States getting attacked the same way, right? We have these same Islamic terrorists that are coming across our border. DHS has already come out and confirmed that we have active Hamas and Hezbollah terror cells. I recently just traveled down to the Darien Gap, where I found a lot of people, right? Thousands of people, 3,000 people a day coming in through one single migrant camp called Bajo Chiquito. You do the math, that's over 1.1 million people per year just from one migrant camp. Okay, speaking with Panamanian officials, them saying they've identified members of Hamas and Hezbollah trying to come through. So if we get attacked by those same terrorists, are we going to really take orders from other countries telling us that we need to have a ceasefire if the United States government decides to unleash holy hell on the heads of the people that decided to attack us? I think it's inappropriate. And if people are truly America first, then they shouldn't be concerned about whether Israel is retaliating against Hamas in Gaza. Sending more aid, I'm not advocating for more aid. So I don't really see why people are so triggered by my position.
Well, I mean, to your point about the ceasefire, I guess it's true that there was technically a ceasefire, but it's also true that there were Palestinian casualties who were killed at the hands of the IDF before October 7th. But regarding your specific stance about you are America first for sure, but I think it's a little bit hard to say that the U.S. shouldn't be able to say, hey, ceasefire this or that, when currently they are sending a lot of aid to Israel. And we can have a conversation about what it would look like if that aid weren't going there. But I don't think it's unreasonable if that aid is being sent for people to have an opinion and for the United States to maybe try to tip the scales one way or the other. But I think that might be, if anything, an argument for why that aid should not exist, because it would honestly probably give Israel a lot more leeway in terms of its own sovereignty of what it could do if the American taxpayers weren't footing the bill, at least partially, for it.
Well, we're broke. We should be having a conversation about all foreign aid, right? Not just aid to Israel. 100%. I'm against aid to Gaza. I'm against all the aid going to Ukraine. I think that we need to have a serious conversation about how much aid. I think that Israel probably receives a little too much aid from the United States. And yeah, maybe that's why groups like AIPAC campaigned against me when I ran for Congress. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe that's why groups like the ADL work to silence me. But I think that the rhetoric has become very toxic regarding this debate. If you take the position where Israel has a right to defend itself and you are in favor of Israel using military force to defend itself, then automatically, right, you are labeled as a traitor to America first or somehow Israel first, where, you know, we should expect all sovereign nations to want to utilize full military force to protect themselves if there is an imminent threat to their country. Like, that's what a sovereign nation does, right? I'm not advocating for war, but you can't exactly complain about aid to Israel and then get upset when Israel wants to defend itself. I agree with your point. I mean, maybe, right, maybe we wouldn't be having so much contention regarding this matter if we would just shut up and allow Israel to do what they wanted to do as it relates to eliminating and neutralizing Hamas.
Well, and I think the reason why you maybe particularly get accused of being Israel first is that your position of not wanting to send aid to Israel, but also supporting Israel's right to defend itself, that is, I mean, frankly, that is the minority position. It's not something even within the GOP you often hear. The idea that, yeah, it's a sovereign country, they should have the right to defend themselves, but also no aid. And so I think when a lot of people hear you defending Israel, they are assuming that you also want to be sending them aid, which is not fair to you to attribute like the positions of other people, right, just because you're also pro-Israel.
Yeah. And just because I'm Jewish, right, people assume that these are my views. Well, I've advocated for reform when it comes to foreign aid. When I campaigned for Congress, another thing I campaigned on was no dual citizens in Congress, right? I think that a lot of the contention that we see comes from the fact that we have members of our own government that have dual citizenship. And right. In times of conflict, especially now in times of war, I don't disagree with the people that are questioning the loyalty of some of the members of Congress and whether or not they have the best interests of America at hand. When you do have members of Congress who have dual loyalties and citizenships with other countries. And so I think that we should outlaw dual citizenship for all elected officials here in the United States. I think that we should only allow for citizens born here in the United States of America to assume office and hold elected office. Because take away the Jews, for example. Okay, people get accused of being Israeli dual citizens in Congress. Let's look at the Muslims that we have in Congress. We have foreigners, people like Ilhan Omar, who are also just as disingenuous in their approach to the conversation at hand with the war between Israel and Hamas because of their own loyalties to other Islamic nations. And so we have a serious problem as it relates to our own legislative body here in the United States that arises because of the foreign conflicts and the foreign sympathies that many of our own lawmakers who weren't even born in this country hold.
I think that's a good point. And you know, the idea that this was potentially xenophobic, it's hard to argue that combating xenophobia is more important than protecting America's national interest. And, you know, Cenk Uygur, he made a whole stink about being a second-class citizen with regard to his failed presidential run. I don't know if everyone watching this is familiar, but Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks, he's actually born in Turkey, but he is a naturalized citizen. He was trying to run for president, basically, I think, as a PR stunt, as a lot of people were pointing out. Though, Cenk, are you actually eligible even? Because of course you have to be born an American citizen. You can't just become one if you want to be president. It's a different story for Congress. Right. But then he basically said that, no, this idea that there should be two types of citizen is discriminatory. I don't really think that's a bad thing, that you should be discriminatory about who becomes president. There should be a lot of discrimination about who becomes president.
Yeah, there should.
I think he just ended up dropping out, but I was very concerned to learn that there have been some court rulings, or at least he's arguing, that may actually paint the way in the future, perhaps, who knows, with the Supreme Court going the way it is, for foreign-born people to even be eligible to become president.
Yeah, look, it was the same case with Nikki Haley, as I exposed. I exposed the fact that Nikki Haley was an anchor baby and people went ballistic and they said, oh, you're being really discriminatory, you're being misogynistic, you're being racist. Because I pointed out the fact that her parents are Indians who both were not U.S. citizens at the time of her birth. And technically speaking, to be considered a natural born citizen, you have to have at least one parent who is a United States citizen when you are born on U.S. soil. And neither of her parents were U.S. citizens at the time of her birth. And you have many such examples of this. All of the judges, for example, who are trying to persecute President Trump right now, or at least many of them, you have Judge Mershon, who is overseeing the trial that's set to begin in New York City on Monday, the Stormy Daniels trial. He wasn't even born here. He's from Colombia. Judge Chutkan, who is trying to, you know, encourage President Trump to be locked up because, oh, well, President Trump initiated an insurrection on January 6th. She's from Jamaica. Okay. Even Judge Eileen Cannon, who I would say isn't as bad as some of these other judges, she's not even from this country. So you have a lot of these judges who are impacting the fate of our nation. And you have people in Congress, you have people in the Senate, you have people who ran for Senate. Look at Dr. Oz, for example. He had dual citizenship with Turkey. Meanwhile, you have Erdogan publicly proclaiming that he will happily send United States soldiers back home in wooden caskets. Like, if we ended up going to war with Turkey, whose side would Dr. Oz be on? So these are all legitimate concerns that I think people need to be, you know, focused on and be having conversations about. But unfortunately, right, because I'm, I guess, an anomaly maybe within the Jewish community and also within the conservative right, I just don't appreciate being painted with a broad brush because I am America first. And I just think that you know, people have varying views on issues, but we need to have an honest conversation about who's doing majority of the persecution in the Middle East. When it comes to Christian persecution, and I'm not denying that this exists, Christians are the most persecuted people in the world. Who's doing it, right? Why don't we have Tucker Carlson give a real interview about Christian persecution? Let's talk to some of the Nigerians who are being slaughtered. Okay, let's talk to Christians who were slaughtered in Syria. Let's talk to Christians who are slaughtered in Egypt. Okay, let's talk to these people who have been slaughtered, their family members, if you want to have a real conversation about Christians being persecuted and slaughtered in the Middle East.
Well, and I think one of the reasons why Tucker Carlson zeroes in on Israel in this regard as well also comes back to the fact that American aid is part of this. So, and, you know, obviously Boko Haram is a huge issue, especially for African Christians. You know, they are slaughtering Christians over there. But I think it is a bit of a different issue when you're saying, okay, but potentially the arms that are being used to, in some cases, kill Christians are being at least in part funded by the American taxpayer. So, you know, I think there is room to say, let's keep it in perspective and let's not forget about the Christians who are being.
Well, look at Ukraine. Look at all the Christians that were just slaughtered. Absolutely. But it's not just Israel.
Ukraine
more
as well.
More Christians were slaughtered in the conflict between Ukraine and Russia with over $350 billion of U.S. taxpayer money and military support. What about all of those Christians?
No, I think that's an absolutely reasonable point to bring up. And it's not just that they were being slaughtered in the conflict with Russia, but we actually have the Zelensky government targeting Christians and persecuting them. So, yeah. And this is someone who we are arming. We are considering like our new great ally as of like 2 years ago for some reason. I think we should be having these conversations. And I do think that if we are going to call someone our ally, we should hold them to greater standards than random, you know, African countries.
Yeah. And Zelensky's a Jew, and Zelensky as a Jew is also arming and you know, giving support to groups like Azov Battalion, Nazi groups, right? So the world is backwards. You have the so-called, you know, Jewish president of Ukraine arming Nazis to slaughter Christians and Jews. So I think that it's not just Christians that are being persecuted, but if we're going to be talking about the persecution of Christians, there's a lot more examples with a higher death count than what's happening right now between the conflict regarding Israel and Hamas. That's just my point, right? I just wanted to see a little bit more intellectual honesty because, yeah, the conversation about Christian persecution is something that, in my opinion, doesn't get enough media attention, especially when you look at how many Christians are being slaughtered around the world to date. But is it really intellectually honest to zero in and focus on Christian persecution as it relates to Israel and Gaza when we also have the Ukraine war going on right now? I mean, what is the death toll compared when you calculate the death toll of Christians that have been killed in Gaza as opposed to Christians that are killed in Ukraine and Russia?
Well, I think it's also interesting to talk to this priest because he also brings up the theological aspect of it all. And there is, I think, a discussion to be had amongst especially American evangelicals about what the theological backing of this is, because there are people like Mike Johnson who very firmly believes that he should be not only supporting Israel, I guess, morally, intellectually, but also financially, because it is, in his opinion, biblically mandated. And so I think that is an important discussion we as Christians need to have. And I think at least part of what Tucker Carlson was trying to get at in that interview was the idea that there is this divine mandate, that this is an interview where it's true the priest, he did like 80% of the talking. Tucker wasn't really an active participant for most of it. But I do want to share this super chat from Mark Zart. Good afternoon, Lauren and Laura. Laura, thank you for all the work that you do, like going to Panama to cover the illegals heading toward our border and exposing the judges and prosecutors in the Trump lawsuits. We actually have some news regarding, I mean, it's not really Trump, but yeah, legal implications for the election coming up. But I do want to say a quick thank you to today's sponsor, Factor. So you guys may be familiar with Factor meals. They are basically like TV dinners, but better in every way. They can be shipped to you every week. And it's so that you don't have to order out or cook or spend a bunch of money, but you can still have a delicious, nutritious, and fresh meal ready for you in around 2 minutes. And if you are swamped with work, like childcare, whatever it is, like me, then that's basically all you could ask for out of a product. And that's why I was so excited when we got them as a sponsor. So with Factor Meal, every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, vegan, and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. So again, every week you can get delicious meals delivered straight to your door. You put them in the fridge. There's a ton of different varieties of dishes that are offered. I mean, they have really good Korean-inspired, Indian-inspired stuff. They also have like barbecue chicken. It's just delicious stuff. Again, it's ready in my microwave, 2 minutes, and you're good. And this makes it so you don't have to order out. You don't have to plan ahead. If you're just hungry and you need something quick, that is what Factor Meals are great for. So head to factormeals.com/1050 and use code 1050 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month, which is an amazing deal. That's code 1050 at factormeals.com/1050 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So huge thank you to Factor for sponsoring this video. So Laura, do you want to tell us a little bit?
I'm going to check out Factor Meals now too. My gosh, I'm always on the run. I never have time to cook.
I know. And I end up eating out a lot, which is not good for weight loss. But would you mind telling us a little bit about your Panama investigation?
Yeah, so I recently traveled to Panama, and I was in the Darien Gap, and I visited the different migrant camps where a lot of these illegal alien invaders are coming through. And a lot of people, they have this misconception of, oh, wow, all the illegals are just coming into the United States via Mexico. Yeah, maybe they're coming in through Mexico, but what are the transit countries where majority of these people are arriving and receiving resources and coordination to carry out the rest of their trip? And Panama and the Darien Gap happens to be one of the main areas where a lot of these illegals are coming in through. And so I spent 10 days there with my producer and cameraman, and we went into the different migrant camps, and we were able to actually get access that really isn't granted to most journalists. And I was able to see firsthand the different NGOs and the different organizations that are being funded, of course, by our taxpayer dollars, right? So we are funding this invasion. People think of it as, oh, wow, you know, the Biden administration is just allowing for all these people in. How are they getting here? Why are they getting cell phones? Why are they getting, you know, new clothing? Where are they getting it from? Well, we are paying for it. And when I say we are paying for it, well, you have groups like DHS and you have the United Nations, and then you have religious NGOs like HIAS, which is a Jewish NGO. You have Catholic Charities, you have Doctors Without Borders receiving millions of dollars per year in grants and funding from the United States government. And what they're doing is they're setting up shop within these different migrant camps, and they're helping, right? They're helping these invaders with maps, with instructions, with food, with phones, with clothing, get to the United States. One example of this was HIAS, which stands for the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. As I said, it's a Jewish NGO. And ironically, Alejandro Mayorkas, who's currently testifying in front of Congress today for the budget hearing, he was on the board of HIAS. So you have a secretary of DHS that used to be on the board of one of the main NGOs that is importing invaders into our country under the guise of Judaism. Right? That seems like a big conflict of interest. And their funding has actually increased by over 200% since Alejandro Mayorkas has been the secretary of DHS. So, you know, you call this out and people will call you an anti-Semite for reporting this. Even I get called an anti-Semite for reporting it. So what did I discover when I was in Panama? Well, inside the Bajo Chiquito migrant camp, Hyatt actually has a wall where they have maps plastered with instructions, including the level of the water, okay, how fast the current is, the temperature, the bus routes, the best time to travel from Panama to Costa Rica on a bus where they then go to Nicaragua and Honduras and Guatemala and Mexico to get to the United States, okay? We're funding this, and I'm happy to report that following my, you know, expose of HIAS, some of the maps have now actually been removed. After, you know, mass outrage from this organization, the president of HIAS was caught lying on the record to the New York Times, saying that they don't facilitate migration following the a piece published by the New York Times in response to my reporting. And we had video evidence that proves that HIAS actually is teaching these invaders how to get to the United States. And following my reporting as well, Doctors Without Borders was instructed that they're no longer allowed to operate within the migrant camps in Panama by the Panamanian government. So it's been quite impactful. And that was just that me being there for 10 days, and I'm coming out with a documentary called The Great Replacement as well, where I'm going to be talking about how The Great Replacement is not a conspiracy theory. It's actually very real, and it's being funded by the United States government. So we're being replaced by our own taxpayer money.
No, absolutely. That's the kicker of it all. Not only is this happening, not only is the country being undermined, your vote being diluted, but you're actually paying for it to happen. So
right.
Fast forward to November, if Trump wins, what do you think are the odds of this actually being reversed? And I don't think, you know, we could talk about mass deportations. I hate to be a black pillar, but I think to a certain extent, damage has already been done You just can't undo. But what do you think the likelihood is of actually stopping all of these operations, or at the very least starting to roll back the tide of people who just seem to be flowing into the country?
Well, you know, I always say that the two L's in black pill stand for Laura Loomer, right? Because I am a perpetual black pillar. But you're right. Look, I support President Trump, and I agree with his mass deportation plan. I think that we should be encouraging mass deportations. But how are we going to be able to mass deport 60 million people? Because right. It's not 11 million people, right? It's 60 million. It's funny, isn't it, how the 11 million number has been the same ever since
never
the
changes.
80s. It never changes, even though we've had, what, like 7.5 million, they say? Those are 7.5 million that they know of. What about all the people that they don't know of? There's about 2.5 million, they say, getaways under the Biden administration. So why is it that this number has always stayed the same, this 11 million? It's because it's not a real number. It's a fake number. So I would love to see mass deportations. I would love to have a real border SAR carry out mass deportations. And I would love for there to be an immigration moratorium as well. But we are going to have to pay for that, right? With mass deportations, you have to identify these people. You have to pay for more law enforcement. You have to pay for travel, because how are they going to get out of our country, right? You have to have agreements for receivership, okay, from these countries, which we already know the Venezuelan government, for example, is not going to agree. They are not agreeing already. They're being combative, which is why Joe Biden has issued temporary protected status for over 500,000 Venezuelans during his administration. So not all these countries. Look at Haiti, for example. Do you think there's going to be a receivership? We just had this crisis here in the state of Florida where Ron DeSantis said, we're going to repatriate Haitians. How are you going to repatriate Haitians when it's a failed state? Right. Who's going to accept the Haitians, right? These are failed states. Majority of these countries that people are coming from are failed states, which means, realistically speaking, the concept of mass deportation won't work, because in order to have a successful mass deportation, technically speaking, you have to have a repatriation agreement, right? Would you agree with that?
No, 100%. And I think it's important that you bring up that these are failed states, because oftentimes when we talk about resettling migrants or refugees, there are people who are trying to be, I guess, somewhat sympathetic to these migrants, saying, well, we just need to vet them. If we can just vet them, then it's okay. How are you going to vet someone when they come from a failed state? Ask me that. Yeah. Are you going to go to the Haitian government, the Haitian police force, and say, hey, can you perform a background check on this person? What are they going to tell you? They're probably going to tell you, we're in Haiti, we have bigger problems, we don't know what's going on. And so that was basically the impetus, the fact that you cannot vet these people. That was the impetus for the specific country ban that Trump implemented temporarily, that was falsely called the Muslim ban. But it's true. We need to talk about the fact that these are failed states. And when it comes to even accepting any legal immigrants from countries like Haiti, Somalia, there is no such thing as vetting, because there is no government over there.
There's no vetting. And honestly, there's no difference anymore between legal and illegal immigrants. There's just no difference. There's no difference anymore. We're at a point in time where we're at such a crisis in our country that we just need to have a full-blown immigration moratorium. It doesn't matter. Like, you'll hear conservatives say, oh, well, you know, we're not against immigration. Well, I am. I mean, I don't know about those people, but I am. I am against immigration. I don't want any more immigration in my country right now. We can't even take care of our own people. We're in enormous debt. We have 22 veterans a day committing suicide. Okay. The average family cannot afford to live. They cannot afford to survive. We're on the brink of absolute societal collapse. I don't want any more immigration, legal or illegal. So we need to pressure more Republicans into adopting this position. People like to say it's xenophobic. People like to say it's too nationalistic. Well, I think that, you know, nationalism keeps you safe. Profiling keeps you safe. Discrimination keeps you safe. And when I say discrimination keeps you safe, I'm saying having standards, right? Because what's the difference between discrimination and preferences, right? There's really no difference. People think that discrimination is a bad thing. Well, if it's being utilized as a standard, right, to establish standards of safety, is it discrimination or are those standards? So I think that a lot of this is just word games. It's a manipulation of semantics. And people, as you said before, really disturbingly so, are willing to play these word games at the sake of our own national security and our own public safety. And people are getting killed, and people are going to continue to get killed if this is allowed to continue.
Well, I think there are people out there who are honestly, I guess, so weak-willed, who lack a backbone to the point that they would rather put the country at risk, potentially their own families, than be called racist or xenophobic, than be potentially considered to be bigoted in some way. But honestly, for a lot of the people who are at least behind this, behind the scenes, I think this is purposeful. I think they know what they are doing, and I think they will use like the guise of tolerance as a way to shield their actions, but I don't think they actually care. I don't think they actually believe that the people who oppose them are racist. I really do think that they are Machiavellian and using like all of these social justice buzzwords as a way to push through their globalist agenda, frankly. But this brings us to 2024.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm in Tennessee. I've spoken to people around here. They are already noticing that the level of immigration has really skyrocketed under the Biden administration. And we have this clip here that kind of talks about the way that strangely, maybe even young people might be starting to favor Trump over Biden.
2020 NBC News exit poll, candidate Biden led former President Trump by 24 percentage points among voters under 30. But an NBC survey in January had President Biden up by just 8 percentage points among that group. Another poll last month showed Mr. Trump ahead by 18 points among voters under 30.
So what is going on here? Because obviously in some respects, Gen Z is super progressive, the most progressive we've ever seen. But in others, it seems like they are still not really huge fans of Biden. So what do you think is going on there? Do you think that immigration is one of the issues that young people are caring about and looking around and saying, I don't know about this?
Well, I think immigration is an issue, but also I think that it's just the implication of and the consequence of immigration. Gen Z, interestingly enough, in 2024 is going to be the largest voting demographic. It's actually going to be replacing the boomer demographic as the largest voting block, right? So you're going to have a lot of first-time voters, Gen Z voters getting out to vote. However, a lot of these young adults and Gen Z voters are now starting to get their first paychecks, right? They're starting to realize, wow, I can't afford to live in a place by myself. I can't afford to get an apartment. I can't afford to get a house. I can't afford a car payment. Oh my gosh, am I going to pay for gas? Am I going to eat? Wait, I can't go out to the store. That's why you see all these videos of these girls having mental breakdowns in their cars. Yes, who are so Gen Zers, and they're sad. And I see a lot of conservatives mocking these videos. I don't mock them because it is sad. You know, it is really sad. You have a lot of young people that are working very hard and they probably are exhausted. And, you know, people will laugh and say, oh, ha, ha, ha. Well, what did they study, right? Well, you know, not every young person is getting a gender studies degree. There are people that genuinely are trying to, you know, get a degree and get a job, and they're realizing that, you know, they can't get a job. Do I encourage people to go to college? No, I don't. I don't encourage anybody to go to college and waste their money on getting indoctrinated unless they want to be a doctor or a lawyer or something that, you know, requires an advanced degree. But you have a lot of young people that are just trying to get through, and they're realizing that no matter how hard they work, they can't climb. They can't afford right. anything. And I think that they're looking around and they're realizing, wow, Joe Biden's economic policies really aren't that great. They're not going to make my life any better. And they don't really know what life was like 4 years ago under Trump, because many of these people were still minors living with their parents, probably still being taken care of and supported financially by their parents. So this is all they know.
And I guess it's kind of concerning to hear that Zoomers are going to be the biggest voting bloc, because even though it looks like polls have confirmed they're not necessarily 100% for Biden, but when I look at the Democrat platform, it does seem like they're dangling a lot of carrots in front of Zoomers, right? They're talking about student debt relief. They're talking about trying to, you know, make college more affordable by, oh, easier to take loans, which we all know, right, if you look at the numbers, actually makes college more unaffordable. But a lot of these young kids don't know that. And, you know, you even mentioned it yourself, when we have these young people who are breaking down, crying because they can't afford this, they're working this many jobs. It's funny, I do see conservatives who simultaneously may be bashing the Biden economy. Bidenomics is terrible. Americans are suffering. But when you have an example of a person suffering economically, but they're young, there is that almost knee-jerk reaction to, well, you know, kids, so entitled. I just worry that even if Republican policies are the best for the economy, the messaging by some conservatives is so out of touch with Gen Z, they're still going to be kind of going right to the Democrats.
It is out of touch. And that's what I was just saying, is that do I think that most Gen Zers are going to be voting conservative? No, they are the largest voting bloc, which concerns me as well, because a lot of them, you know, they have a lot of backward views. I'm not saying that all Gen Zers are progressives and, you know, they're all, you know, in favor of this communist takeover of our country, but a lot of them are. And I get concerned when I see really large conservative accounts making fun of Gen Zers who are struggling, because it's not just Gen Zers that are working 3 to 4 jobs. There are people who are also millennials that are working 3 to 4 jobs and can barely get by. There are seniors who are living on Social Security who are now having to get back into the workforce and I saw this when I'm running for Congress in Florida. I met a lot of seniors that can't afford to live on their Social Security anymore, on their fixed income. So the messaging needs to improve. Republicans generally are pretty terrible at messaging. I don't think that, you know, they've done themselves a service in terms of their messaging on the abortion debate. I know that you wanted to talk about that as well. Yes. We know that Democrats have been able to sweep elections in 2018, 2020, and 2022 in terms of, you know, down ballot races by campaigning on the issue of abortion. And then you have Donald Trump, who comes out and, you know, speaks common sense, saying that he's pro-life and that he's not in favor of a national abortion ban. There's never going to be a national abortion ban because, well, Roe v. Wade was overturned and this is an issue to the state. So why are we trying to legislate something on a national level that really isn't going to be legislated on a national level anymore? And Republicans lose their mind, right?
Right.
So they have to put their own personal opinions aside, in my opinion, for the greater good of the country. There does have to be some compromise, because the reality is this issue of abortion specifically has now been relegated to the states. And there's a reason why, right? There's 50 different states. Not all states are going to agree politically as a majority. I think that we can all agree on that. The way that Texas legislates isn't going to be anywhere similar to the way that California or New York legislates, right? I think that we can all agree on that. So it's unrealistic to blame Donald Trump or to blame Republicans that understand that abortion is never going to be legislated on a federal level again for this messaging. And right. I think that hinders Trump winning. It hinders Republicans winning. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's my
opinion. No, I was somewhat confused because I'm pro-life. I follow a lot of pro-life accounts who I actually saw reacting to Trump's statement before I saw the actual statement. And these pro-life accounts were going very hard against Trump. You know, we've been let down. There is no pro-life candidate. I was expecting to then go and watch Trump's statement and basically hear him come out in favor of abortion on demand. That's how much sorrow there was from these pro-life accounts. I watched the statement myself. And like you said, he affirms that he is pro-life and kind of kicks it to the states. That I don't think is the same as what a lot of pro-life people are pointing it as. I've heard people say, well, you know, this is murder. How could you say it should be left up to the states? Actual murder is also left up to the states, right? If you talk about murder charges, those are also a state's issue.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to the issue of abortion, we cannot even begin to start talking about a federal abortion ban leading up to a presidential election unless we start to turn the tide in terms of the messaging and the culture. Because I think abortion is an immoral issue. I think if we got our messaging right, we can identify ourselves as correctly being pro-life, pro-science, and pro-woman. But we are not there yet. And I think it's a lot easier to blame Trump for not standing hard enough on the pro-life side than it is to recognize that as a movement in general, we are failing at messaging and we can't even begin to start talking about, oh, but if we're in power, what will we do? Like, no, we're never going to get to power unless we start changing people's minds. And until we succeed at that, then, you know, it doesn't help anyone to just lose elections for eternity. That's not going to save anything either.
Republicans don't know how to be on offense either, right? They're not, they don't want to talk about this issue. And I saw yesterday, they allowed the Democrats to control this whole narrative. There was zero pushback on, oh, thanks Donald Trump and Carrie Lake for the abortion ban in Arizona. How are you going to blame Donald Trump when he literally came out the day before the abortion ban in Arizona and say that it's his fault when his own statement says that he's against a national abortion ban? If you're against a national abortion ban, you're also going to be against a ban in the state. You are. And President Trump eloquently stated, just like Carrie Lake stated, that they're against the abortion ban in Arizona.
Right. And I think, but the idea that Republicans are always on defense, never on offense, is something that, honestly, I think it's gotten worse over the past several years, because I think the media, any pretense of neutrality they pretended to have is totally gone at this point. So you have sites or publications like CNN, MSNBC, when it comes to abortion, actively telling women in some of these red states or some of these states where abortion was on the ballot that if you have an ectopic pregnancy, you're going to die. If you have a miscarriage, you're going to be put in jail. Outright lies. And what did Republicans do? Nothing. So again, I'm pro-life, but until we start getting our act together, you can't blame President Trump for realizing that he still needs to get in office if he's going to enact any change. And I think the most important thing he could have done, he did done, which was to, you know, appoint the justices who got rid of Roe v. Wade and kick it back to the states. Well, now it's up to us in the states to win these debates, right? He's done his part. Now we need to do our part.
I agree. And Republicans need to do a better job of messaging. Look, Donald Trump is our candidate. He's our nominee. And so people like Lila Rose, and I'll call her out because I view Lila Rose as being probably the largest pro-life voice in this country, right? She leads one of the largest pro-life organizations. And what kind of message is she sending? Is she going to vote for RFK Jr.? Is she going to vote for Joe Biden, who wants abortion on demand and is in favor of infanticide and supports people like Ralph Northam, who push for killing babies even after they're born? I'm just wondering, like, what is her end goal? Because we're not going to have another Republican nominee. So is she just saying she's not going to vote? I'm confused as to what the messaging out of the pro-life movement is, because they're telling people that, you know, Donald Trump should be condemned, right? They think that Donald Trump should be condemned for his very reasonable stance on abortion, which majority of Americans agree with. I want to point out too that over 75% of Republican women, according to polling that has been done, are in favor of President Trump's stance on abortion. Okay. Most women agree with this common sense approach. Most women, and I knew these numbers from when I ran for Congress myself, when you look at internal polling, 75% of the Republican women in my district, at least in Florida, in the 11th district, were in favor of exceptions. You're going to have a really hard time selling a lot of people on the idea that a woman has to carry her baby to full term if she's raped or a victim of incest, regardless of how you may feel about that personally.
I feel like there are pro-life people who will unfortunately let perfection get in the way of good. And I think it's once more the way, one of the ways that the right shoots itself in the foot. They will be so frustrated with the fact that someone like Donald Trump is in favor of exceptions to abortion restrictions that they will perhaps stay home and not vote for him at all and end up with someone who is much, much farther to the left. It's one of the frustrations that I continually have. And, you know, one of the things that I do want to talk to you about as well is you've mentioned kind of lawfare. That's something that you cover extensively. Gosh, where is it? We have some recent news from Sean Hannity here. If I can bring this up. Woman who stole Ashley Biden's diary sentenced to 1 month in prison. What do you think of? Do you think that's fair? Do you think that this is a politically motivated sentencing?
I think it's politically motivated. She didn't steal it. The diary was left behind, right? The diary was left behind. So if nobody claims something, right? It's like the concept of a lost and found. What happens when a product goes to lost and found? What happens?
It doesn't have an owner, right? Especially like if I were, I think that's especially, that's even true if it's something like a laptop or something that has value, but I would assume it's especially true if it's something like a notebook or a diary that really has no intrinsic value whatsoever.
So what happens? I mean, you've seen it. I mean, you went to school. What happened when you were younger if your school had a lost and found? What happened when nobody would claim the products from lost and found?
Up for grabs.
Up for grabs or donation.
Right.
So it's up for grabs. And so if somebody doesn't claim their property, especially after 30 days or so, right? Generally speaking, then it goes to either Goodwill or they give it to somebody, they donate it to somebody, or it's up for grabs. That's the process, right? That's how all lost and found works. And that's how I view the concept of the Ashley Biden diary. It was left behind. Nobody claimed it. Nobody reported the diary missing. And then it was turned over for journalistic reasons. I think she's lucky she only got a month in prison. I mean, there's look at the J6ers right now. I think that with the Biden regime, she's lucky that it was only a month. Not saying that she deserves longer time served, but just the way that our justice system has been completely weaponized and the way that some of these sentences are being given out, they're very excessive, right? It's quite brutal the way that I had Joe Exotic on my show last night, the Tiger King, and we were talking about this and just how some of the offenses that people commit in this country, whether they are petty drug offenses or nonviolent crimes, you have people being sentenced to 15, 20, sometimes 30 years in jail, right? And you're taking away somebody's entire life over something so small and nonviolent. This also is political because the diary was given to Project Veritas, right, where I used to work. And of course, Project Veritas, prior to it dissolving, right, and this coup against James O'Keefe, had been known as an organization, nonpartisan, but they developed the reputation of being an organization that would predominantly go after leftists and expose leftist corruption. So I don't think it's fair. I think that the diary is of journalistic importance, especially the parts about how, you know, Joe Biden would inappropriately shower with his daughter. It raises the question about whether or not we have a pedophile sitting in the White House.
Quick question from Dominic Falcone. How can Gen Z be the largest voting bloc when one third of them are still under 18?
Well, I think that they're also calculating people that are 21, 22. What is the official cutoff?
I think so. I'm 94 and I think I'm just a little too old. I think I'm technically like a millennial. I think 97 is the, so you, I mean, you have like 10 years of Zoomers who are around 10 years of Zoomers who are able to vote, like 18 to like 27, 28. So that's quite a big chunk of people.
I just know that Zoomers are going to be replacing boomers as the largest voting block. And yeah, those are numbers too. Even the Biden administration touts that, right? When they have their Zoomer TikTokers, they say, oh, Zoomers are going to be the largest voting bloc. I mean, I've seen Republicans and Democrats, especially the Biden administration, tout the fact that that Zoomers are going to be the largest voting bloc. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that a lot of boomers are dying off. I don't know. It may have something to do with the fact that some of them are dying.
Right. Something I do want to just get your closing thoughts on is when it comes to this lawfare, do you anticipate that there are going to be problems for Republicans at the election, after the election? It seems like they're pulling out all the stops to make Trump ineligible to actually be on the ballot come November. So far, they've not been successful, but do you think that they're perhaps going to be an October surprise around the corner? They're going to pull out whatever tricks they can, or hopefully are Republican eyes a little more awake this time around, that maybe they won't try what they did in 2020?
I think that nothing has been done, right, to fix the issues of fraud that occurred in the 2020 election. And Republicans are going to have to face the reality of the fact that we're going to have to do more to combat voter fraud. I think that, you know, Donald Trump is clearly the nominee. They're going to do everything they can to try to put him in jail. I think that they know that they're going to make him a martyr if they put him in jail, and that he'll raise millions of dollars, and that will kind of just be the point of no return, right? They will officially open Pandora's box at that point. And even your most moderate Democrats and your undecided voters are going to say, okay, this is a bit too third world for me. I'm going to be voting for Donald Trump. I think that that's too far. And that's why you haven't seen Donald Trump get arrested, even though he's tested the limits of his gag order, right? You have seen, I wouldn't say that he's broken the gag order, because that's up for interpretation based off of the language of these gag orders. But I would say that he certainly tested the limits. What do you see? You don't see the judges throwing him in jail. They know that there's going to be a revolution in this country if they decide to jail Donald Trump. I wouldn't put it past them trying to assassinate Donald Trump. I would say that they are going to be getting desperate. I've seen even Tucker Carlson speak out about that, right? Tucker Carlson has said that he worries they're going to try to kill Trump. Something I do agree with Tucker Carlson on, right? I know that people say that I'm a Tucker hater because of my criticisms today. I don't hate Tucker Carlson. I just, you know, I think that we should be able to criticize influencers or pundits within our own movement without people, you know, just saying that we all hate each other, right? We need to be able to have conversations. I do think that they'll try to go as far as inciting violence against President Trump's life. I do.
I don't think that would be a huge stretch, frankly, from what we've seen. I think that there are, I mean, we have proof that there are activists who have said that they will literally stop at nothing to make sure that President Trump doesn't get back into the White House. I worry the same as you and Tucker that something will happen to Trump, but I don't think that means that we shouldn't, I guess, prepare for the best. Wait, plan, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. There we go. Figured it out.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that a lot of people's eyes are being opened by these witch hunts. They're clearly trying to just drain President Trump of his resources and his money. That's been made very clear to the public with these egregious over-the-top fines and the, you know, devaluation of his properties. Nobody actually believes that Mar-a-Lago is only worth $18 million. Nobody believes that President Trump overvalued his properties. Nobody actually believes that Donald Trump had sex with E. Jean Carroll. Right. Nobody actually believes this stuff. So I think that they're doing themselves an incredible disservice by continuing their lawfare campaign against President Trump. And the more people I meet that are undecided, they say, wow, this has really opened my eyes. Even last night, I encourage everybody to go and listen to my interview live from a jail cell with Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, because you'll even hear from him himself. And he was a Democrat, right? His own observations of being in jail with the January Sixers, why he's supporting President Trump, why people in jail are supporting President Trump, according to Joe Exotic, even if they can't necessarily vote, because we have a weaponized government problem. I think that we need serious criminal justice reform in this country. And those are issues that are going to be relatable to all types of first-time voters. And regardless of their of somebody's demographic, whether they're a Zoomer, a Boomer, or a Millennial. Because if there's one thing that every single person in this country can relate to, it's this dichotomy and the power struggle that exists between a citizen, right, an ordinary person, and an authority figure.
Right. And it seems like the blatant double standard between who gets special protections and who doesn't, it's just getting, it's getting more egregious by the day. You have, I mean, in New York and California, people really roaming the streets who are actual violent offenders. Meanwhile, you look at what's happening to the January Sixers, and it's hard to argue, frankly, that there is an unbiased and fair justice system in this country, which is tragic, but it extends all the way to President Trump. And I think for voters who are watching this, I mean, just imagine if what they'll do to Trump, do you think they would hesitate for a second to do the same, if not worse, to you?
And they will. They'll go after all of his supporters, and they'll go after all of the so-called MAGA Republicans in Congress, right? And I say MAGA Republicans because, look, if they're going to be able to go after Donald Trump, why would they stop?
Right.
They're going to utilize the new population of the 56 million illegal aliens to make 13 new congressional districts. And then we'll have Democrat control in this country forever. Well, and they'll give Puerto Rico statehood.
Well, on that note, Black Pill Laura Loomer, thank you so much for the awesome conversation. Your links are down below in the description. So guys, encourage you to follow Laura if you're not already. But would you mind also shouting out where people can find you and what platforms you're most active on?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. And people can follow me on Rumble, rumble.com/Laura Loomer. You can subscribe to my Rumble. Watch my show every Tuesday and Thursday, Loomer Unleashed, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then my website is loomered.com. That's loomered.com, where you can read all my reports. And then you can follow me on Twitter, X, Gab, and Getter at Laura Loomer for all of my breaking updates and also my reports.
Awesome. Well, Laura, thanks again. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Reminder, this is available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you wouldn't mind also rating the show, that would be awesome, unless you were going to rate it negatively. In that case, don't bother. No one watches the ratings anyway. But we'll see you next time. Until next week.
Thank you.